BBC Six Music Podcasts. Six Music. This is a free download from the BBC. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic. And now, Adam and Joe.
Ah-da-da-dum.
Joe.
Ah-da-da-dum.
Joe.
Ah-da-da-dum.
Joe.
At da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da
da da da da da da da da
da da da da da da da da da da
da da
da da da da da
da da da da
da da da da da da da da
Joe, thank you very much for that, Peter. He said, I think you should do your... introductions to the Indiana Jones theme tune.
It's gone into Superman now.
Yeah.
The love theme.
It does happen, though, with... Williams sometimes. They do drift into one. Shut up now!
Sorry, but it's so moving.
Hey, welcome, listeners, to another podcast. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And, boy, last weekend was my birthday, and
yes.
Thank you for the very nice messages I got from a couple of people who had, I don't know how, but they managed to find out it was my birthday there. I'm not a big birthday guy, which is why I didn't go on about it on the show.
Well, when you get to a certain age, you want to try and ignore them a bit.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't you?
And I ended up, let me tell you that my birthday day ended up with me, my sister, her boyfriend, and my
naked
brother.
Naked in a bath of dog muck.
What a horrible thing to say.
Why would you say that?
Dog muck. Why would you say
it's just... I know you guys. It's just a guess. It's just a guess. I mean, it's a special
it's
day.
It's wrong.
It's a special day.
It's a wrong guess.
It's the kind of day where you can do that kind of thing if
it's
you want
my
to.
My sister and my brother.
And you, naked in a... Yeah.
Maybe with my sister's boyfriend, but not all of them together in dogma. Right,
sorry.
No, what we did was we went into my shed and we listened to the previous week's podcast.
You didn't?
Yes.
Did you really, on your birthday?
Yeah. It was the thing I was most
the
excited about doing.
Weeks. What? So last week's?
No, the one from the week before.
Why
yeah,
that one?
Last week's wasn't out yet.
Oh.
It was the weekend.
And how did that go down?
It was good, man. It was a good podcast, that one.
How did my stuff go down? Did I get any laughs?
Yeah, you did. You got some laughs.
Laughs?
We got laughs in all the right places.
Did we?
And
they're a tough crowd as well. I mean,
very tough crowd.
They're family.
My sister's boyfriend's a journalist. And, you know, he's a critic.
He's a rigorous mind.
Yeah, so I was nervous.
What a day.
It was amazing. I did feel like a bit of a loser, though.
Why?
Because it wasn't as if they suggested it. I suggested it.
Were they all wearing, like, little flimsy dressing gowns?
No,
waving their hands in a sort of triple version of your YouTube video?
It was a cold night, so we all had to put extra layers
really?
On. Really? It felt weird, I have to admit, going out to the shed and, you know, dressing
up. Did you
up
have...
Warm.
At your birthday dinner,
yeah.
Were there a couple of sort of dead people nailed into chairs? And did you try and make one of them sort of drink by operating their dead arm? Oh, no, did you try and make one of them hit your sister with a hammer by putting the hammer in their dead hand? And like
so you're saying that round at my house for my birthday, it's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, that's a good bit, though, isn't it, when... He tries to hit the guy with a hammer with a dead hand.
Always gets a chuckle around at our place.
Oh.
Dad, it's your favourite bit. Check this out. Let's get on with the podcast right now. We'll join you for Retro Texanation halfway through and with outros at the end. Here it is!
This is a podcast from the Big British Castle, featuring portions from the Adam and Joshua Radiogram.
It is brought to you in super sounding stereo. So now my voice is coming to you from the left and now the right.
I was in Borders this week. It's one of many, many shops where you can buy mags.
Sure.
And I was buying a mag. In fact, this was 2 weeks ago, but it stayed with me, this event. And the transaction went very smoothly. I'd been queuing for a while. You know how they do it at that shop. They've only got two checkouts for the whole store.
Right.
And you have to form a big queue. A lot of queuing there. Anyway, I finally got to the front. I was paying for my mag. And the transaction went really smoothly. And as I walked away, my foot caught in a stand holding a lot of books and magazines. And the whole stand came down.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Bad
one. It just crashed down. And it was all going so well. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Bye-bye. Really embarrassing. Everybody turned and looked.
Yeah.
It really did. The magazine spilled out over a huge surface area. It was very spectacular.
Wow.
And I was really, really embarrassed.
So you ran away?
I couldn't handle it. You know, in a situation like that, you should be cool and calm and collected and laugh it off.
Sure.
I went really red and started umming and erring.
And crying.
And not crying, but I felt like crying. And I felt humiliated as I bent over to start picking them up.
Did anyone help you?
Yeah, they started to help me and they started to say, oh, let's just move that stand. That stand shouldn't have been there.
Silly stand.
Silly stand, exactly. I was like, no, it's all right. Keep the stand there. It's fine. It's my fault. Keep the stand there.
Don't move the stand. Just leave it there.
Everyone was looking. It was as if I'd accidentally killed someone and their guts had spilt out all over the floor and I was trying to put their guts back in. It's all right, your guts will be fine.
Don't help me. I'll put it back.
I ran out of the shop flustered.
I'm sorry.
Has that ever happened to you? Anything like that? Please say it has.
Yeah, all the time,
all the
boy.
Time.
You wait till you hear about the week I've had.
But I could sue them.
That's right.
Have you been injured in a trip or fall at work that wasn't your responsibility?
Yes.
Yes, I have, by the stand.
I was humiliated and hurt by a dangerous display stand.
It was not my fault that the man's guts fell out at the cash register.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah, I just had to get that out.
It's been a tough week, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Mind the gap.
Yes, it mind the gap.
Do you remember that bit in Terminator 2 when he calls his mum at home?
Sure.
And asks about Wolfie, Max the dog.
Uh-huh.
Remember?
Yeah.
And then you cut to the house and the mum, her arms turned into a massive shiny metal spike.
Right.
And it's clearly the Terminator talking using the mum's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. That's who I am.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm just thinking that we could both be Terminators and there'd be no way the audience would know.
Oh, I see.
We'd be just talking in Adam and Joe's voice, but you look at the webcam and there's two terrifying, soulless metal androids with red glowing eyes at the mics.
They could. The Terminator...
The producer James is lying dead on the floor with a milk carton impaled through his forehead.
It's just another Saturday at the office.
Just a flight of fancy.
Why did that suddenly get in your head?
I don't know. I'm becoming a bit obsessed with Terminators.
Are you?
I haven't seen the new film, but something about the marketing is giving me a Terminator urge.
Well, you know, we do have this clip that someone sent us in. A listener chopped together a couple of film reviews that were broadcast on the BBC networks. And he's done quite a good job of...
Shall we listen to that now?
...mashing them together. Why not, as we're talking about Terminator?
Yeah, so this is a guy that... He just heard two completely different reviews from two completely different reviewers. One from Radio 5 and the other one from BBC 6. He's called Ben and he lives in Shepherd's Bush. And these reviews have confused him. I think Ben, his name's Ben Jackson, he expects a sort of consistent line from the BBC, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A sort of corporate take on something. And he hasn't been supplied with it by these two reviews. This is what Ben sent us.
Terminator Salvation is out.
I have to say, for me, out of all the summer blockbusters so far, this one is absolutely in a class of its own.
Life-threateningly dull.
Really bounces along.
So crushingly dull.
The action sequences are breathtaking.
A bad version of Transformers.
It really does deserve it. It's really amazing. Also, the way it's directed, my goodness.
He can't direct films. McGee is a director. McGee managed to do it. Now, McGee is you can't make films.
Where the camera just whizzes in and out of the helicopter while it's crashing.
McGee.
And it's not often these days where you watch something and say, I do not know how they did that.
But, ah! I'm being directed by McGee. Why did Christian Bale do it?
You can see on screen he's marching around like he's about to hit somebody at any moment. Acting, of course.
He is absolutely rubbish in it.
As I say, for me, it's the biggest and the best of any of the summer blockbusters. To be honest, I can't see anything else touching it.
So that's Commode, isn't it, snoring there?
That's Mark Commode intercut with Liz Kershaw's film reviewer, Jeff Simpson, here on BBC Six Music. Two directly oppositional views on the same film.
I haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, but the general vibe I get...
Thumbs down.
...is towards Commode's point of view.
Yeah, it's one or two star reviews, generally.
It seems to me that Jeff Simpson is going out on a limb there for the majesty of McGee.
He was knocked out by it. He absolutely loved it. How do they do that when they go through the helicopters? I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, how do they do it?
How's it done? I mean, there's bits in there where you're thinking, how did they do that?
And then... there appear to be live dinosaurs in the film, a Diplodocus and a T-Rex, and it's jaw-dropping. Laura Dern interacts. She gets very close to the dinosaurs, and then there appear to be explosions in space, which is impossible because there's no oxygen in space. And it was remarkable, absolutely remarkable.
And then Philip Seymour Hoffman takes off his face, and it turns out it's Tom Cruise wearing a mask. I mean, my brain just melted and dribbled out through my nose.
I mean, I'm sure maybe he's right. Maybe it's really good. They say that McGee directed the dramatic scenes, and he left the action up to the second unit.
Okay,
that's the rumour. So some people are saying that the action sequences are really good. This is Terminator Salvation we're sure. talking about. So, you know, maybe it is quite good.
He's a masterful director of drama. No one can question that.
Yes, certainly the Charlie's Angels films were moving and engaging and very human.
Mark Commode was spitting bullets there, though, wasn't yes. he? He went completely nuts. And McGee!
Yeah, he was. He's good, Commode. He really puts his all into things.
Can't mess with his quiff. He's the kind of
Jeff Simpson, though. That would be exciting. I'd like to be stunned by very basic special effects. It would make life more entertaining, wouldn't it?
It's very patronising towards Mr. Simpson, who's an experienced...
We're just riffing on a tiny little bit of his review. We don't know. It's out of context, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally out of context. Yeah. That's how we like things.
That's how we like things. And then I couldn't believe it when a second Michael J. Fox walked into the room. Either they've got a lookalike, or I don't know what.
There were seven Michael Keatons all standing there. It was blowing my mind.
And that's why Multiplicity is the best film I've seen this year.
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah 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 waffles. Blah 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
So, listeners, you're tuned into the Adam and Joe program on Six Music, by the way, in case you didn't realise. I'm going to get something off my chest now. I've had a difficult week, right? I've been working hard doing this sitcom. Mm. I got home yesterday having picked up a hire car, right, from the production company, which makes it easier for me to get home after this show to go to Norfolk and then spend some time with my family before getting back to rehearsals and stuff. I got back to where I was staying in South London, parked the car, went in to get the visitor's permit, right? Because I'd specially gone out to Lambeth Council, bought some visitor's permit books. Go in to get my visitor's permit, fill it out, come out. What do you think's happening?
Towed away?
Not
ticket.
Ticket. He's finishing writing the ticket. He's just popped it in the system there.
How long had you been parked outside for?
He told me how long it was. He'd been observing the car for 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes?
Yeah. So how do you think I dealt with the situation?
I would have. He's put it in the thing, has he? He's punched it in the thing.
Punched it in the thing. I'm extremely tired. I'm absolutely exhausted. Mm. I have made a point of going in and having the parking book standing by. Got it specially from Lambeth Council. Mm-hmm. Come out, slapped a ticket on me in an empty street for being parked out there for 2.5 minutes.
Time of day?
Time of day. It was 5:45. So only 45 minutes left on restrictions anyway.
I would warrant you flipped your flipper.
weird. I did exactly that. I went absolutely nuts, right? And I just totally lost my temper. And I should say at this point, before I go any further, that I was very ashamed and still am very ashamed of how angry I got and how I dealt with the situation, right? I'm in no way glorifying anything I did thereafter. I behaved like an idiot hole.
Right.
And it made me feel really bad and still does talking about it.
What did you do? Do it. Do what you did. Say what you said.
I thought I should confess, right? I'm using this show as a means of confession. So I went nuts, got really angry and said, what are you doing? I've been out here for 2 minutes. And he's like, well, you've been out here for longer than 2 minutes because I've been observing the car for
2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is... But he didn't tell me this for quite some time. His default reaction to me getting angry was getting right back up in my grill as well, right? Which doesn't usually happen. Usually the parking attendants, and it should be said they do a very difficult job. Usually they remain incredibly impassive, almost to the extent that it makes it even worse for you. You get even angrier because you want a human reaction from them. But this guy... He got right back up in my face and very quickly, and it sort of escalated, right? This contretemps. I was very careful not to be physically threatening or anything like that. But no, I should say, you know, I was
really...
You
didn't hit him.
I didn't touch him.
Right.
And because you don't want anything like that to start happening in those situations because it can easily get out of hand. I mean, anyway... So I didn't, you know, I was really careful not to swear at him or do any of that kind of stuff. But I was absolutely mad. You know, I was really hopping bananas. And he, at one stage, I think I called him a disgrace, right? I said, you're a disgrace. You're not doing a good job.
What was
job.
Your angle that he's not doing a good job, that he's being overly officious?
Yeah. It's like, what's the point? What do you think you're doing? What do you think the point of your job is? Isn't it to keep traffic flowing? Isn't it to make sure that, you know, roads not being obstructed by poor parking? I am doing my best. I'm breaking, you know, I'm bending over backwards to comply with the regulations here in an empty street, parking outside my own residence, you know, and I'm getting these visitors parking permits and I'm being penalized. And there's absolutely no, you know, there's no accountability from the parking wardens, right? Of course, it's not the individual warden's attendant's fault, right? He's just doing his job. But when they say, I'm just doing my job, that is not the thing you want to hear. That just makes you even madder. So it was all getting totally out of hand, this situation, you know, and all these cliches were going back and forth and this, and I called him a disgrace or something. And then he used the N-word, right? And he said, like in hip-hop parlance, N-word, please. You know, he said that to me.
Crikey.
And I thought that was a bit off, right? And and even though I wasn't offended by it, of course.
Yes.
I just thought, I'm going to use this as ammunition.
Nice.
And I'm going to say, that's a racial slur. That's a racial epithet. How dare you use that kind of offensive terminology, right? So it was all getting
wow, like, what a contemporary situation.
It was really bad.
It's like the film Crash.
Exactly. It was exactly like Crash.
That I've never seen.
But I was just fuming, you know, and all rationality and reasonability had gone out of the equation.
Reasonality.
Reasonality is the correct word. And then a colleague of his came along on a scooter and tried to calm, and it was very professional, tried to calm the situation down, both parties, and saying to his colleague, you know, step away, just leave.
So what's the conclusion? Did he retract the ticket? No.
Of course not. No.
No, he can't once he's punched it into the system.
Yeah, he just says, if you want to appeal, you can appeal to the council. Thanks
who
very much.
Who do you
much.
Think won then?
I would say he probably did because I behaved like such an idiot hole.
Right.
Because here's the thing. I went further, right? What do you think I did then?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Well...
Instead of letting it go at that point, which any sane human being would...
Did you threaten some kind of, you know, going to superiors?
I went and I got my digital camera.
And you took a photo of him?
No, I put it on filming mode and I followed him down the street, chatting to him about why he thought it was a good idea to penalize people. And I was very calm at that point, right? I was just talking. It wasn't out of hand anymore. And so I was just chatting to him, but obviously he didn't like being filmed.
No.
And then an Australian man on a bike stopped and said to me, like, leave him alone. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And at that moment, I caught myself, like, I realized what I was doing.
Wow.
And I felt insane. But then the Australian man said, well, you can afford to pay the ticket, can't you? I just thought, that's not the point at all. You can't, you know, people aren't being penalized just because they can afford to pay things. This is totally unfair. But obviously, I realized that what I was doing was absolutely insane.
The filming.
Yeah.
What would you have planned to have done with the film?
I don't know.
YouTube? I mean, you've got a successful YouTube channel. Was that not in the back of your mind?
Possibly.
I'm going to use my YouTube channel for vigilante justice.
Yeah, possibly I was thinking that. Possibly I just wanted to wind him up a bit, you know? But whatever I was doing, it was very bad.
It's very contemporary, the surveillance society.
But the nice thing about it was that it had a kind of calming effect. Mm. And especially after the Australian interfering man had gone.
Right.
Wasn't
the voice
on my
of reason.
Side. When he cycled up, I thought, oh, yes, he's going to be on my side. Swampy's going to be on my side. And he wasn't. I was a bit miffed about that. But
Swampy?
So yeah, he had big dreadlocks like right. Swampy. So he calmed down. We all calmed down. And in the end, it turned into quite a beautiful love-in.
Really?
Yeah. I said, listen, I'm sorry. I erased the film. I shook hands with the guy. The guy said, listen, you seem like a nice guy. If we met under other circumstances, I bet we'd get on. And I wasn't sure about that. But he was nice, actually. He was pretty nice. And he calmed down. I calmed down. I said, I'm so sorry I got so angry. I tried to explain why I got so furious, you know. And he tried to explain his point of view. In the end, it was quite beautiful, and we made sweet, sweet love.
In the street.
Right there on the street.
Wow.
No, but I came out of it very shaken because I thought I'd behaved
trembling.
So appallingly, yeah?
Back in the house, I was really the front door, trembling.
Yeah, I was very ashamed. And I would like to know, for Textination today, this is the longest build-up to Textination ever. For Textination today, I would be keen to hear about other confrontations that have just shown you in the worst light. Like how...
Well, you've taken it too far.
Taken it way too far and you've dealt with it way too badly. Obviously, famous public examples of this are Peter Buck on the plane, and it happens on planes a lot, doesn't it? And Ian Brown.
Air rage.
But those are things that have, you know, they've ended up going to prison. We don't really want to hear things as extreme as that.
But this specifically, you felt you were in the right and then your own emotions put you squarely in the wrong.
I just behaved like a Wally solidly for half an hour, yeah. And I was ashamed. So I would like to hear similar stories from other people so I don't feel so alone.
Solid Wally.
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
It's Joe.
Regular listeners might know that on the Song Wars thing we do the other week, we did Apprentice-themed songs. Adam did a song that accused all the contestants of being idiots.
Morons,
and repeated it over and over again. And
I'm a stupid moron. He's a stupid moron.
It was a good song, but he was upset when word came that they were going to choose my Margaret Mountford song maybe to play on The Apprentice, You're Fired.
I wasn't that upset. I was pleased for you,
man. You were furious.
I was a little bit angry.
So, basically, I waited with bated breath last Sunday evening, pretty sure that this time they were going to use the song. As
so
you know...
I.
My aspirations to have my Song Wars song used on television have been thwarted how many times? Thrice. With both of ours. Antiques
yeah.
Roadshow, they promised. It was a no-show.
No.
What was the one with you? I forget.
Biff Baff Boff.
They were going to use on the
I'm a Celebrity
sister show. I think that was one more, but I've forgotten what it was. So we had emails from people who'd been in the audience of the record of the You've Been Fired final. That's not what it's called. You're Fired final.
Yep.
And they said, yes, they played it in. Yes, Margaret listened to it. So I was pretty sure, you know, it still seemed unlikely, but I thought this time it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Pretty much the whole weekend I was waiting for Sunday evening.
Same here.
Didn't really care about the result of The Apprentice. I was just solely focused on my song. I was trying to pretend I wasn't as well in the front room at home. We had some friends watching as well with us. And I was trying to be very cool. I was particularly, slouched in an overly relaxed way to try and give off the signals that I didn't really care.
Yeah.
And so that I didn't look, so that I looked unfazed if they didn't play it.
Sure. I'm going to the kitchen, guys.
Yeah, I'm not interested in this program. I'm going to the kitchen to get something quickly, quickly come back.
Something really quickly.
And so my stomach was turning little cartwheels. My heart was pitter-pattering. Mm-hmm. There were little butterflies in my stomach.
Mine was as well, and it wasn't
really?
Even my song.
Oh, I thought, this could be big. I had some fantasies in my head about, you know, the consequences of what would happen if they did use it. This is the kind of thing, I tried to repress it, but I couldn't help thinking, YouTube smash. Massive, at least a massive YouTube smash. I mean, I'll probably be up all night watching the numbers rocket on the YouTube video. And maybe I'll get a call from a record company and it's going to be a single.
Demi Moore.
That'll make Adam really angry.
That'll
it's going to be a hit signal. single. Demi Moore, you think she might have got
it? Well, because she got into the whole Susan Boyle thing, didn't she?
She never turned up, though, did she? They said she was going to turn up for the final, but she didn't.
She sent a personal message
did
of
she?
Support, I think.
Anyway, the program started and... Up came the bit when I thought they'd play it. It was a little montage about how The Apprentice had impacted in the media.
Yeah.
And no, there was no song.
There was a clip
strange.
Of TV Burt with Harry Hill being very funny.
Yeah, and some online sort of Lego Man, some very funny YouTube animation someone had done with Lego
but
Man.
But no cornballs.
No cornballs. So I thought, well, that's probably it. That's probably it. But then I realised they hadn't announced that Margaret was leaving.
Right.
I thought, oh, well, they're saving it for the big,
got loads
the
to
big
go,
montage.
Yeah. Sure.
But, you know, anyone who actually watched it will know that they didn't use it in the end at all.
I couldn't believe it. And even right till the end, I was thinking, maybe they'll play it over the closing titles.
Well, they launched a little montage of Margaret, didn't they? Yeah. And they started playing, what, the national anthem?
That's right, they were.
For just a regal angle.
A regal angle.
And I mean, to be honest, I was disappointed.
However, it has to be said that watching the show and the slickness therein...
Mm-hmm. You realise they've got... I mean, for funny songs, they've got the Pants Man song... Yeah. And they've got enough stuff to go into for every single contestant. And then, you know, the winner, the person who came second.
Yeah.
You know, you have to contextualise stuff in TV. You're right. They would have had to have said who I am, what the show is. They would have had to say what Song Wars was to understand it. Otherwise,
exactly.
It would have been this weird, wittering man. If it had been a sort of directly, explicitly funny song, you know, bom, 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 like that, you know, sort of Chaz and Dave, then. But because it was so sophisticated and elegant, it would have scrambled people's braniums.
But she heard it. That's the main thing.
Yeah, well, we've got an email here. Listen, from a listener called Andrew Petty, who says, I sort of know Margaret through my job writing about TV and radio for the Daily Telegraph. She's been writing a weekly column about The Apprentice in the paper. The last time we spoke, I told her about your song and sent her a link. She had a bit of trouble downloading the full version, but Margaret said that the bit she had listened to, the bit, sounded nice and, quotes, rather gentle.
That's very noncommittal.
I thought that Margaret's positive appraisal might offer you, if not a bagful, then at least a quantum of solace after those nitwits at Television Centre cruelly thwarted your primetime TV ambitions.
Oh, well, that's very
once
nice.
Again.
That's a nice email.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. But I would say her, what was it, positive comments? I would say positive is too strong a word for her comments. Nice and gentle.
Had a bit of trouble downloading the full version. What does that mean? How can you have trouble downloading something on YouTube?
Well, you get bored and then you stop.
You get frightened
and
by
you
it.
Do something else.
Margaret Mountford, your hair is like a cloud.
We like to make mistakes on this program. You know, I say that. We don't like to, but it happens, right? Because it's a free-form, shambling show and stuff comes out of our mouths and often it's wrong. And we like to be corrected by our listeners and kept on our toes. So here's a few mistakes that we made on last week's show and in last week's podcast. We do a thing at the beginning of the podcasts where we say our names in the form of a song. And last week the song was also Sprach Zarathustra, also known as the opening titles for 2001. I confidently said, it's also Sprach Zarathustra by Holst. And I was thinking that, you know, because Holst was famous for the Planet Suite, right? Mars Bringer of War, etc.
He was responsible for all space-based
everything
space-based
music. That'll be Holst. Yeah, it's got something to do with space. That's Holst.
Strauss.
Richard Strauss. Mm. That was pointed out by Oliver Russell, amongst other people. Thanks, Oliver. Although I did realise, as soon as I said Holst, really
sure you did.
I thought, that's probably wrong, isn't it?
Next mistake,
Bowie. We were talking about Bowie last week. Fiona emailed us to say...
Oh, is this the Hoggle Coggle thing?
Right. She said, Dear Adam and Joe, I love your show, capital letters for love, and I listen to the podcast several times a week. I mean, she really likes this thing. I sing along to all the jingles. I laugh at all the jokes. I have a good time listening. She couldn't be happier, you would think. However, she says in capitals, last week a large portion of my enjoyment was removed when the pair of you...
You see, now, I thought this was on purpose. I thought you'd like invented a new type of variation of the name of Hoggle.
I tried to remember because there's a joke in the movie Labyrinth. We were talking about Bowie, right? Yeah. And we were referring to how we would ask him questions about Labyrinth if we ever got the chance to interview him. I was trying to remember the name of the little man with a big nose in Labyrinth. And there's a whole running joke about the fact that Bowie keeps getting his name wrong. And
good excuse.
And we
his real name's Hoggle, right?
Yeah, we were calling him Coggle. In fact,
that's
Bowie calls
right.
him Bowie calls him Coggle in the film, and he goes, "No, it's Hoggle. My name's Hoggle."
Yes.
So she says, "You call yourselves pretty high level Bowie obsessives, and then you proceed to make ridiculous mistakes that any true fan would know. Firstly, it's Hoggle in the brilliant film Labyrinth, not Coggle or whatever you made up. Secondly, who doesn't know Bowie lives in New York? I mean, I was talking about visiting Switzerland to try and track him down. To be fair, he's got homes all over the area.
Yeah.
Right? That was just one of his homes. I knew that Bowie lived in New York.
We could just, you know, we could just ignore these mistakes. Just roll with the punches.
Yeah, you reckon?
We might just be encouraging people.
I don't mind being corrected. She says, thirdly, the baby dancing song in Labyrinth, which I referred to as Dance Baby Dance. Those are the lyrics, though. Is called Dance Magic. So get it together, boys! Anyway, she still loves the show. She even liked the Disgusting Habits segment, she says. Lots of love from Fiona. Thanks very much, Fiona. Appreciate that. So, you know, if we do make massive gaffes, then you can let us know. But don't be too pedantic, otherwise life just isn't worth living. You know, and I said earlier on that I was a bit worried I'd opened up a pedantry can of worms with the bad grammar in pop songs thing, right? Although here's one that did strike me as being quite accurate. Sean in Galway said, hi, gentlemen. You're talking about an infuriatingly bad pop grammar. Well, here's an infuriatingly unanswered question in a lyric in Love Shack by the B-52s, which begins, if you see a painted sign by the side of the road that says 15 miles to the Love Shack. It's almost exactly how it goes. He then says, they go on at length to discuss the merits of the Love Shack, but never at any point do they answer the initial question. If you see the aforementioned faded sign at the side of the road that says 15 miles to the Love Shack, what? They don't say, says Sean in Galway. I think that's a fair point. Are you worried
about
that?
Well, I just think too it's pedantic. Clear that the party, you know, we're there with the party. It's just a big party. The B-52s are there. Isn't the video even set in the Love Shack with all sorts of stuff happening in the shack?
Yeah. So what's the answer to the question?
I just think you're going down a never-ending road.
Right.
You know, lyrics are poetry. They're abstract.
That's true, isn't it?
I mean, what are you going to do if you take everything literally? You're going to drive yourself insane.
That's all true.
And me.
And you.
And a portion of the listenership.
Sorry.
I'd like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration, because I couldn't join in with Dexter Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared, because Retro Destination's here. And now my letter might be read out, or is the trash you forgotten about?
Wow, that's a thrash metal Retro Text the Nation jingle, recorded there for us by Theo Campbell.
He almost coughed up his guts in there.
That's good, though. I mean, he's nailed the style of that kind of vocal so well. It's almost like it's a different language.
I wonder if he composed that from scratch, because he's got all the guitars. I really want to be able to do that. I'm not currently able to reproduce that type of music.
I do believe he did play a lot of it live there. He sounds like quite an experienced and talented thrash-style musician.
Good job, man. Thanks for those. And, you know, don't forget, if you would like to retool any of our jingles, either as completed versions or as beds that we can then sing over, please feel free to do so. You can find out more on our blog. Now, Retro Text the Nation this week is about last week's Text the Nation subject, which was kind of superstitions or magical thinking, as we came to call it.
Coincidental events that happen in your life into which you sort of read huge significance. And we had a lot of weirdly similar emails from people about this, didn't we?
As well as a lot
of patterns emerging.
Right, as well as a lot of ones about people's routines, kind of superstitious routines.
Mm.
Here's a message right now from Sam from Bath. Dear Dr. Buckles and Mr. Corndog, how are you feeling about being called Corndog?
That's my name.
Happy about it? I'd like to submit an entry for Retro Textination. It involves my friend Branners. I fear that any more information of his identity may cost him his job. 4 years ago, when we were at helicopter flying school together, that's the kind of person I want to hang out with, I noticed that his digital clock in his room was about 20 minutes fast. After much probing, he revealed that every time he looked at said clock, and it was revealing minute 13 after each hour, he would have to hold his breath, blink 20 times like a malfunctioning robot, and put the clock forward a minute. I can hear Dr. Buckles shout, "No way, that can't be true." But it is, and there's more. "No way, that can't be true."
You did it just like she said, or he said.
It's all coming true. When I asked him why he didn't reset it, he told me that he would only authorise himself to do so at 8 p.m. on Sunday night. Later, I found out
that the same superstition applied to the clock in his car. He never told me what would happen if he didn't carry out his ritual. Maybe he was too ashamed. Love the show. Cheers, Sam from Bath. That's a very strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, that is pretty strange. I think the thing is, you were saying last week that there is a line between this kind of thing and sort of serious OCD conditions. And some people, you know, texted in to say that if it actually becomes problematic and makes you overly anxious and interferes with the daily, you know, cycle of your life, then maybe you do actually have a bit of a problems.
Yeah.
And that sounds like, you know, I'm no professional, but that sounds a bit worrying, especially for a helicopter pilot.
That's what Sam's saying. It's like, oh my goodness.
Here's a rather romantic couple of emails we got on this subject, and these are two listeners who should really get together. Tim Parkin writes, "Hello, Adam and Joe. I've got an obsession with keeping the volume on the radio or CD player at an even number. If I can see the volume being adjusted on a TV at a friend's house, hi-fi at a party, or even the radio in a taxi, I insist on it being left on an even number for fear that something terrible might happen."
Ooh.
So that's Tim Parkin. And then Rose Locke, a lovely lady.
Ooh.
And as we know, men and ladies can form relationships.
A woman.
"I used to have to set the volume of my stereo on an even number, unless it was a 6 or a 4, when it had to be set at a 5 instead. If someone else set the volume to an odd number, except 5, I had to get up and change it. This only mattered in my own house, so after a few years of frustration, I bought a stereo without numbers. I no longer worry, Rose Locke." So Rose and Tim there have the same obsession. That could be the first Adam and Joe Show Text the Nation wedding.
Special OCD wedding.
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
They'd be fun to have around the place with their clock adjusting.
They'd be good to work in a radio station.
They would, wouldn't they? It'd be bad timekeeping in the radio station.
That's very nice. Here's one from Nick. "Hi, chaps. My odd superstitious behaviour normally presents itself when I'm visiting the supermarket. The first thing I have to do is steal and eat an olive, even if the deli goon has clocked me."
Deli
goon. Have you ever heard of that kind of thing? That's outrageous.
What, a deli goon?
No, stealing olives.
Oh.
Like he's got a compulsion to steal a single olive. "The second task I have to perform is when I've selected a bottle of wine. I have to toss it up in the air and spin it through 360 degrees and catch it. I think the reason behind carrying out these missions is to prove to myself that I'm still willing to take risks. I haven't been busted yet or dropped the bottle, but I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Love the show, Nick." Thanks, Nick. So he's setting himself like little wild man challenges there, yeah?
That's good, healthy.
But he feels compelled to do them. "I'm going to steal an olive and eat it. And then I'm going to throw this bottle through 360 degrees. That's just taking little manageable risks, isn't it? Quite nice, in a way.
Quite nice. Sweet. Charming. But theft.
But theft.
So,
and
please.
Dangerous bottle behaviour, so can't be encouraged.
"Sorry, mate, we're going to shop you. Because we're the BBC. Here's one from Athene Bain. Text the Nation is my favourite part of your show. By the way, I loved last week's. And this week's about weird obsession and superstitions might even be my favourite topic ever."
Wow.
"More seriously, though, I have a compulsion that if I see a red postal van, I have to touch my tongue. Over time, this habit has become rather dangerous. I cycle a lot around Bristol, and that is the time when I see the most post vans. Such is my compulsion. I often lose focus on the road around me, and while cycling at 20 mph, take one hand off the handlebars to touch my tongue." I'm reading this like Michael McIntyre.
I like it.
"I estimate that I've fallen off my bike on the main road due to said compulsion about 4 times in the past year."
On the main road. That's how Michael McIntyre would do
it. Does he?
He's got the voice that kind of goes
from... I used to be able to do him. A couple of weeks ago, I could really do him. But I can't anymore.
Tough luck, Buster.
Anyway, that's very dangerous there, Athene. And you must be very careful. And no one must copy that. And maybe everyone who contacted us should see a doctor.
You could go head over your heels on that bike there. James Wright says, "Hi, Joe and Adam." Brackets, "I'm mixing it up a bit."
Nice.
"When I'm walking down the street and I see someone doing a good deed or a person who I deem to be nice, I wish them good luck /bless them with 3 taps to the side of my right thigh. However, this must be done properly and exactly. Otherwise, it can cause a right kerfuffle in my head. For example, if I were to do 2 successful taps, but the 3rd one was a mere glancing blow, or worse, I only caught the material of my trousers, or my arm touched my coat while I tapped, I have to push cancel on another part of my leg and start again. This used to be a ritual I used for my own good luck, like a sign of the cross. But after a succession of bad luck and not getting what I prayed for, I deemed it of no use to me and have graciously passed it on to the people of the high street. Cheers, cornballs and buckles! James Wright, Plymouth.
Did that just descend into sort of nonsense towards the end? Passed it on to the people of the high
street? Yeah, he used to do it for himself. Like, it used to be a ritual, a tapping ritual to give himself good luck. But he realised it didn't work. So now he does it for other people, for strangers.
He goes up to strangers and taps their thighs.
Doesn't even go up. No, he's tapping his own thigh.
Oh, I see. For
he sees someone nice and he goes, you're nice. I will bless you. Tap, tap, tap. But if the blessing goes wrong, he has to reset. Press cancel on his other thigh and start again. That's a good one.
Well, that's a full-time job, though, isn't it?
Definitely.
Getting down the street must just be tricky. Hey, and the other thing that loads of people emailed us was a superstition that I'd never heard of, but seems to be very popular, which is to do with three drains. Step on one drain, then you must step on the second drain, but you must not step on the third. And lots of people emailed us that. It seems to be all the rage with the kids. And if you see a friend, you know, about to step on the third drain, you push them violently out the way. And lots of people sent us stories about nearly being shoved into the road because people had done that. It sounds dangerous, but exciting.
Wasn't it in some way connected to Michelin
well,
Impossible?
Well, different people. Michelin Impossible. Yeah, that's a very good film.
Yes.
It's possible to find a Michelin garage in this area of the Côte du Rhône.
Would you like to sit down here? The big man with the tires. He wants to sit down here. That's impossible.
What's that?
It's Michelin Impossible. That's the man.
Right,
the Michelin
right,
man.
Right. Yeah, but anyway, so that's a common one that I thought I should point out, the whole drain business. I'd never heard of that.
No, that's weird.
Different people had different logic to justify it. But, you know, we like to keep you in touch with the latest drain-based trends, listeners, and we've done our job.
Thank you so much for all your texts and emails on the subject of superstitions or magical thinking for this week's Textination. And, of course, next week, it's all about altercations that have got out of hand, as you will be able to hear in the rest of this week's podcast.
I can see what you are up to, ooh, while you are listening to this podcast.
A couple of weeks ago, was it a couple of weeks ago, we did a little grunting masterclass?
Yes, a couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah, I was harnessing Adam's skills as a screen actor to just take you listeners through some of the grunting skills that are required for performances in action films. That's good, man. What was that?
That was lifting a manhole cover with a body lying across it.
Yes. Very good. Very good. Important part of any actor's repertoire to be able to grunt for big screen movies. But I've always been fascinated by The Archers, the Radio 4 drama series.
Are you a listener?
I listen every now and then. I'm in a room when other people are listening.
Sure.
Or I catch the beginning and switch it off. But I do love The Archers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's occurred to me that there's a special skill required for acting in The Archers, similar to the skill of grunting for action films. In The Archers, it seems to me moaning and sighing
right
is very important.
That's good.
Seems to me when I listen to The Archers on Radio 4 that they're constantly coming into a room and sighing, making tea, and then sighing again, and then that's the end of the scene.
That's the default tone of The Archers.
I think so. It's
sort of ennui.
It's something that permeates Radio 4 drama as a whole is sort of abject sighing.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way of emoting on the radio.
Yeah, well, it's important. You know, it's obviously you can't. There's nothing to look at, no face to express. So you've got to use the voice as a... I mean, you know this, Adam, already as an experienced actor.
Yeah.
You've got to use the voice as a tool in radio very particularly. But I don't know, maybe sometimes it gets a little bit much on The Archers.
Right.
There's a little bit too much sighing. I wondered what would happen, for instance, if I took an episode of The Archers and removed everything but the sighing.
Uh-huh.
I wondered what that would sound like, so I done it.
You've done it. Let's have a listen.
This is what it sounds like.
Thanks. Anyway.
Tom.
Brenda.
Right.
Now you see, it's It's not bad, is it?
No, it sounds good, man, because you've got ups and downs, peaks and troughs
there. Yeah,
I mean, it starts off quite fruity there. There's a little...
Well, it does. It sounds like quite a dirty evening in Ambridge, doesn't it? Ambridge, what's it called?
Ambridge, right.
Yeah.
Ambridge.
Ambridge. It's like Cambridge.
Yeah, Cambridge. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was nice. It starts off very, very saucy and then gets a little bit tiring and then...
Yeah, and then, ah, oh, Tom.
Annoying.
Yeah, and then it sort of kicks off again.
Yeah.
But can you, are you good at sighing there? Could you do that sort of sighing? What if just come in the door and say, you've come home from a busy day's work and you're just calling into the house to see if anyone else is there. Go.
Hello.
That's good, you see. What about if the inspector has come to inspect the drainage systems on the farm and he's laid down a lot of new EU rules on, mm-hmm. on how you're going to have to put the drainage down and, mm. and you're telling your husband about all the new EU rules? Mm.
Well, there's a lot of new EU rules about the drainage.
That's good. You really did that one well.
I mean, I exhaled as much exhausted. As I could.
What about just you've had a hard day and you've just had a sip of tea and you've put the teacup down and this is a sigh that just expresses all the ennui in your life, you know.
Okay. I'm going to sip the tea first, right? Yeah, just to warn you, there'll be a sound effect for that.
No, that was terrible.
Too much.
Yeah, that sounded like a horse doing a poo.
You said everything. You said put everything in there.
Yeah, but it came out as a incontinent foal, horse, all right. Stallion. I don't think anyone in Ambridge would sip tea like that.
Well, I'm doing it. I'm exaggerating. You're not a very good supportive director, I must say.
I can see you in one of the Underworld films, yes, but not in The Archers. You're too big.
Too big?
I think we need an actor or actress from The Archers
I can
come
do
and
subtle.
Teach you about sighing.
That was a great chat. Here comes another. Adam and Joe are rocking the podcast now.
Excuse me.
Now, we had a message earlier in the week from a chap who told us quite an entertaining story, which I'd just like to share with you right now. This is from, where's his name? Geraint. Dear Adam and Joe, a few years ago, I was working on a film called Spy Game. You remember that film, right?
Yeah, Robert Redford and Brad Pitt.
Exactly, directed by Tony Scott. I was working closely there with a guy called Paul, and we came up with an idea. Let's ask famous people to take pictures of us. We might be able to start a gallery of pictures of us taken by celebs. Seemed like a good idea at the time. We were at the rap party for Spy Game in a nightclub in a basement of a hotel in Casablanca in Morocco, where I thought this was the perfect opportunity to ask Brad Pitt to take a picture of me. Mm. He was sitting on a sofa surrounded by lots of people and a massive burly security guard. I approached with my camera in hand. The music was pumping and I couldn't really hear anything except for the blood and nerves pumping through my head. I shouted through the noise, "Do you think you can take my picture?" He shouted back, "What?" I shouted again and again. He said, "What?" Everyone was staring at me and I started to feel myself burning up. A security guard put his hand on my shoulder to push me away, and I felt that surely I had to give up. Suddenly, Brad Pitt stood up, took the guard's hand off my shoulder, and looked me square in the face. He smiled at me and asked, "What do you want?" That's how Brad Pitt speaks.
Yes, it is.
Too scared to talk, I held up my camera. He smiled again, sat back down with his arms out, ready for me to take his picture. Oh, geez, I thought. What do I do now? How do I explain? I just held out my camera, and I turned it round so it was pointing at me, and Brad Pitt immediately understood. He took the camera, sat back, looked through the viewfinder, told me and Paul to go back a little, left a little, hold it, and click! We walked away happy that the ordeal was over, and we noticed the whole camera crew laughing and applauding our stupidity. Paul also later got Catherine McCormack to take a picture of him, but I'd completely lost my bottle by then. That's quite good, though, isn't it? And he sent us a picture of...
I've got the photo here up on my computer screen. It obviously doesn't include Brad Pitt.
No, because he's taking it.
But it's... Well, so he says.
Come on, why would he make that whole thing up?
Our listeners...
Yeah, but he doesn't...
But no, I'm sure that's taken by Brad Pitt. And, you know, in case there's any doubt, the photo file is titled Brad Pitt took this! Exclamation mark.
There you go, that proves it.
But if we were running a magazine and say you thought this was a good idea for a strand in the letters page...
Yeah, it wouldn't be, would it?
No, because how would you possibly prove it?
That's true, isn't it? But it's a good story.
It's a good story.
I mean, it's a good story because I believe every word of it.
Yes, you're a gullible chap.
Come
but
on.
But no, I do believe it's taken by Brad Pitt. Do I?
Yeah.
I tell you why, because the look on the chap's face on the right is the look of a man who is being looked at by Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, I think I get on well with Brad Pitt, Joe Cornish.
You think you
Brad
would?
Pitt. I think we get on well. I was watching the making of Benjamin Button on the Benjamin Button disc. It's got a very good making of.
Probably the best bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a slightly pretentious film.
Mm.
Put it mildly.
But he comes across well in the making of.
It's fascinating. And yeah, Brad Pitt sounds very down to earth, very cynical.
Uh-huh.
And I think I would just really hit it off with
him. Cynical in what way?
Just like me. Just, you know, just no pretensions. He doesn't think he's good looking, even though everyone else thinks he is good looking.
Just like you.
Like me. He's just very real. We're similar heights.
Yeah.
I just think we've got the same gritty outlook on life.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think Brad and I, you know, I think Brad's missing a trick by not getting in touch with me and hanging out, because I think things would improve for him.
Does he have any Brit friends, Brad Pitt?
Yeah, lots. He's got all the Snatch lot.
No, of yeah, course, of Guy course, Ritchie and yeah. all that lot.
He's got lots. He's an Anglophile.
He
likes us. He likes me because I'm particularly down to earth.
No, he's not going to like you.
He is.
If
man,
he hangs
is.
Out with
You're
Guy
too short
Ritchie,
for him. He won't be able to see you.
He would like me because
He'll
I've
keep
got a
tripping over you.
No, no, he would like me because I'm much more like the Snatch guys than you are. I'm very.
Do you
I'm,
think?
Yeah, I'm frightening.
You're more East End.
I'm very hard, and you're a weed, though. What's he going to have in common with you?
Well, he knows that I'm tough inside.
No,
that when you push me, I just snap and get. I go buck wild on your ass. Brad knows that, so that's good news. Anyway. That I'm his favourite.
Yeah. Thanks for the message, though, Geraint, and the picture there. That was fantastic. We're going to put the picture on our blog, okay? And you can check it out. Don't forget, we have a new blog, and it's very exciting. The address is bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe. There's loads of stuff on there, so check it out.
Yeah, check that out and explore it. You can leave messages for us as well.
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
I love the taskbar.
Make them refer to things I do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh
I call
yeah.
it appropriation, and as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
Listen, you know what I was just saying about Yazoo being the year zero
yeah.
synth pop records.
Yeah.
Scrap it.
Because that's it right there.
Flip the script. That's the year zero
the
record. The
pop-propriation jingle.
By Vince Buxton.
By Clarky Buxton. Here's a message from Graham McCary. He says...
Hey, hang on a second. We've got a music bed going on here. This is disconcerting.
I know. It's professional, isn't it? It's faded out now anyway.
Thank God for that.
He says... When standing listlessly at the printer, my eye is often drawn to the screen that shows the status of the toner cartridges. They are labelled CMYK. Do you know what that stands for?
No, I don't.
Cyan, magenta, yellow.
Cork.
And what is K? Oh, no, black is for K, right? But I don't know why K is... Anyway. He says, this invariably makes me sing, to the tune of YMCA by the Village People, CMYK, you fill your printer with CMYK. Thank you and goodbye, Graham McCary.
Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you. Bye.
He's like C3PO.
Exactly.
This is a nice one from Paul. He says, hey, Adam and Joe, just a quick note with a particularly romantic piece of appropriation. I can't even say the name of our feature. My new... You came up with that name, didn't you?
Nah, listener sent
it. Was that a listener? My new wife and I had fun singing this on our wedding a couple of weeks ago. After our wedding a couple of weeks ago. All the way up on the M6, on the way to our honeymoon haven in Keswick, we sang to the tune of kids' TV classic Button Moon. We're off on honeymoon. We're Mr. and Mrs. Broom. Mr. Broom. Mrs. Broom.
Is there a better way to start a happy marriage together? He says, I think probably not, smiley emoticon. We're like the new Peter Davidson and Sandra Dickinson, only hopefully without the eventual divorce. Love the show. Take care, Paul. That's nice, though, don't you think?
That's Rough very nice.
On honeymoon, Mr. and Mrs. Broom.
Yeah, it's nice. It's and maybe a bit too nice.
Is it?
There's something sinister about it.
Do you think their marriage is going to last?
I think there's a carcass in the boot.
You reckon?
Yeah. And some tools for killing.
I didn't like that show, though. Button Moon was not one
What's
of my
What's wrong
favorites.
With Button Moon?
Didn't like it.
Why not? You don't like anthropomorphized wooden spoons?
I was excited by the fact that it was space, right?
Yes, well, it is space, and they get in a rocket.
Yeah, but it's like...
It's made with a dishwasher fluid bottle.
No, it
Little
is.
Little Tommy had to wait ages for Mum to it's use true, all that it's stuff because
it's
it
undeniably
lasts so
a
long.
Charming show for toddlers. But yeah. Maybe I was the wrong age. It just made me.
How old were you?
Furious.
In your 20s.
I was in my 20s, and I wanted some lasers, and some killing, and you know, Mr. and Mrs.
Well,
Spoon.
I'm sure they'll remake it. Michael Bay's going to do the Button Moon movie.
Do a really violent one.
Yeah.
That would be great.
It's going to be awful. Really horrible.
Really?
Really disgusting. Fantastic. It's actually Gaspar Noé's doing it.
Is Takeshi Miike doing it?
He's teaming up with Ruhei Kitamura.
Vinnie Jones is going to be Mr. Spoon.
Yeah.
Here's another one from Craig Allen. Again, printer-based. Or no, computer-based. Here's some appropriation for graphic designers and Photoshoppers. As a designer myself, I occasionally need to tone down the colours in an image. For this, I use a function called hue saturation, hue/saturation, which I can't open without singing to the tune of the Sade classic, hue saturation, hue saturation.
That's good because it's unexpected.
Right.
That's good.
Smooth operator, of course, yeah. That was. Cheers, Craig Allen.
He's only necking, miss.
I've just got a bit of advice for some people in the BBC, some of our fellow Big British Castle dwellers. It was the last episode of Points of View this week.
Oh, really?
Do you ever watch Points of View?
No, who's hosting it these days?
Jeremy Vine.
Vine.
It used to be, I think I'm right in saying it's Vine, aren't I, James?
Used to be Anne Robinson.
It was Wogan for a bit.
Then it was one of the, was it Paul Heaney?
Points of View, that it's important for every television channel to have a show in which the listeners can get, you know, have their say.
Barry Took was the king, wasn't he?
Was he, back in the day. Yeah. But isn't it important for there to be a forum within a channel where viewers can have their say and get a sense of feedback?
They've got to have their right to reply.
Especially for the BBC in this day and age, there's been a lot of scrutiny of the BBC and its values and all that kind of business. So in a way, Points of View is a very important programme because it should seriously reflect that listeners' points of view are being taken seriously.
Yeah.
And you would have thought that would be reflected in the theme music, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I have no idea what the theme music is.
Well, this is the theme music that the BBC have decided to use for Points of View. And they have kind of improved the rest of the show. In the old days... The letters used to be read out by sort of comedy voices. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And it was just a tiny bit dismissive and making light of people's complaints. And I think they changed that. It's now presented by Jeremy Vine. And in the old days, it was in a sort of front room, a cozy sort of front room with some flowers. Now it's in a sort of, he's leaning on a control desk. It's as if it's more serious and like the news and as if your complaints are really getting to a place that matters.
Yeah.
But they've made all those improvements.
The control desk.
But they're still using a theme tune that maybe doesn't reflect the necessary respect for their listeners.
Because I would imagine it would be something like the news, you know?
Yes, a serious and important...
Yeah, like a current affairs
yeah,
theme.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, this is the theme tune they use.
You made that up.
No, that's the real theme music. I had to edit it a bit there because the iPlayer kept stalling.
Ah, it does that. Is that really the theme music?
That's the theme music.
Blah, boobity, bah, yeah, blah, blah, blah,
blah.
Let's have
blah,
it again.
Blah.
Here it is. Blah, boobity, bah, yeah, blah, blah. Blah, boobity,
bah, yeah, blah, 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 boobity, bah, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Now, the BBC has been in some quite serious, you know, trouble in the last... year or so, and that's just a tip to my colleagues in the castle. you might want to change that music.
Who made that? I mean, whoever done that is a jingle genius for a
start.
Yeah,
it's good music, but maybe on the wrong show.
On the wrong show.
Yeah.
See, that would be good theme music for our show.
It would. Well, maybe we should sing over it or do an extended mix of it.
We should do a jingle for... We should do a new piece of theme music for their show.
We should send them the Black Squadron music or something.
I'll try and think of some new music for their show, right? And they can have that. And we can use Blah Boobity Bye.
We need to find out who composed that.
Who composed Blah Boobity Bye?
I'd love to go to a live concert by them. Wouldn't you? I wonder what the album's like.
For their encore, they'd come out and they'd do that four more times.
Anyway, message to Vine there. And
play Barboobity Blyer!
Let's keep an eye on the next series of Points of View and see whether they stick with that music.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
Thank you. You've been wonderful. Throw me your dirty pants. I'll wash them and get them back to you. Thank you.
Well, that's it for our podcast this week. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Don't forget we have a blog available for your further exploration.
Yes, the address is bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe. And that's the place for you to communicate with us or send us MP3 files of jingles you might have written or some kind of exciting YouTube animation you might have done or a bit of artwork or anything, really.
So be nice on there, be respectful, otherwise we'll come round and push you, right? I mean, that's not true, I'm just saying that.
It'll be a gentle push.
It'll be a gentle
push. It'll have an air of menace.
And after you've used the blog, can you please flush? Is this a good outro?
Yes. I was hoping it would go on for much, much longer.
I was thinking...
Oh! Okay, stop now. That's just weird. I can't tell whether you're laughing or crying.
Well, exactly. It was a roller coaster.
I just pictured you as a sort of possessed...
Clown.
Mime ventriloquist dummy.
A mime clown.
Mime, ventriloquist dummy.
That's a good song.
Thanks.
I love that song.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Take care. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
I had astral weeks. You had moon dance. We were both freaks, playing with each other's pants. On the prow of the boat to Patras, patting my face and patting your ass.
Is that based on anything, that song?
That's the song that we sang.
Is it?
Don't you remember?
No, I've slept with so many men since. It's just a big hairy blur.